This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. When you dial 911, your call gets routed to an emergency dispatch center. Sometimes called PSAPs, there are 8 public safety answering points in the state, staffed by local dispatchers. So you call for emergency services, and these are the people that respond to your call. They get your information, they keep you on the line, try to keep you calm if it's a volatile situation, and they usually are the people who call out to the appropriate emergency personnel, police, ambulance, fire, that kind of thing. The state of Vermont runs 4 of those centers, and part of Governor Shumlin's budget cuts this year calls for 2 of them to close. Public Safety Commissioner Keith Flynn says the move will save nearly $2 million. But more importantly, he says safety won't be compromised because technology has improved enough that we don't need dispatchers spread throughout the state. Not everyone agrees with that assessment. Today on the program, we're going to hear from Commissioner Flynn. We'll talk with a fire chief who's concerned about the cuts, and we'll hear from some of our listeners who've been writing to us at vermontedition@vpr.net with their thoughts. But first today, we turn to a dispatcher whose job would be cut if the proposal goes through. The PSAPs in Rutland and Derby will be folded into centers in Rockingham and Williston. Trish Bennett is an emergency communications dispatcher at the Derby PSAP, and she's on the line with us now. Trish, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me today.
Can you briefly explain how your job works as a dispatcher with a little more detail than what I said?
Well, as a dispatcher, we are the first contact with the public for services. When the phone rings, either on our 7-digit line or a 911 line, we are the first people they talk to get them help. If it's a 911 line, our 911, we transfer to the correct people to get them assistance, or in some agencies, they have what's called a dual dispatcher. So the person answering 911 is also going to be dispatching out police, fire, or rescue. So they are going to be staying with that caller the entire time, and they're also going to be talking to, logging information, and keeping track of the responders that go to that specific incident at the same time.
You don't support the move to close the Rutland and the Derby dispatch centers, and I understand that it would likely mean for you that you'd lose your job. But besides that, why do you think that these centers should remain open?
These centers need to be open because they are the lifeline for public safety. They are the lifeline to the responders that respond to the calls from our public. They are a redundancy. If one center, for whatever reason, goes down, you're still going to have 3 more that can pick up the pieces, so to speak. You're also going to have more local knowledge. You're going to have more people being able to answer phone calls, 911 calls. With the consolidation, they're going to cut almost dispatch in half. And so you're going to have half the people answering more phone calls. As they've shown in statistics, call volume is going up. It's not going down. There are more calls for service than ever before, and they're going to be expecting half the people to answer more calls.
Well, it's not quite half. You'd be going from 71 full-time staff members at these dispatch centers to 57.
Correct. But you also have to account that people get done. And the training process to get a dispatcher up and running can take up to 9 months. So you're going to have people that have to fill those positions until someone gets up and running, doing all that overtime, working 12, 16-hour shifts. You're going to end up burning people out. And that's what one of the concerns is they're not going to have enough people to even do this. So the people that are left behind are going to be mandated to do 12 and 16-hour shifts. It's a safety issue. There's just at 15 and a half hours at any job, you're not going to be like you are when you first sit down at the beginning of your shift.
How long are your shifts now, Trish?
My shift is 8 hours.
And do you feel tired at the end of 8? I imagine it can be a fairly intense job.
It can be, depending on a day. You know, if you have a really bad snowstorm or a very large incident, 8 hours can go by and you are mentally exhausted because you have to be on all the time. You can't take a break. There's times where you sit down in your chair at 7 o'clock in the morning, you look up, it's 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and you have not moved from your chair. You've been logging information, you've been making phone calls, you've been connecting services to whatever's going on, and the time just flies by. And at the end of it, you are mentally drained because you have not had a break, because you've had to be on task for that entire time.
I'm talking with Trish Bennett. She's an emergency communications dispatcher at the Derby Public Safety Answering Point, one of the 8 call centers around the state where 911 calls are routed. 4 of them are actually run by the state, and we're talking about a plan to consolidate those 4 into 2 centers. The Derby Center, where Trish works, is one of the ones that would be closed. Is anyone who you work with talking about trying to relocate or commute to work at the centers in Rockingham and Williston?
No.
Why not?
Well, it's a 4-hour trip, round trip for us. So if we have to work an 8, 12, or 16-hour day, we could be driving home after being awake for 20 hours, get 3 hours sleep, and then have to go back again. Economically, it's a totally different ball of wax. Like, with my paycheck, one full paycheck would not even cover rent down there. So I would have to work overtime just to survive. Whereas where we are now, I can support my family with my paycheck. And so economically, you're going to be taking jobs from one of the most economically depressed areas in the state and putting it in an area that has economic flourish. And it just, in that essence, it makes no sense. We need the jobs in the Northeast Kingdom, and they're taking them away.
So what will you do, Trish Bennett, if you lose your job?
Honestly, at this point, I don't know. I may have to get 2 or 3 jobs, just 2 part-time jobs, just to survive. I won't have my health care benefits anymore because I won't be able to afford them. I mean, I'm probably going to be calling the PSAP in Williston looking for services myself to find out where to get services. It's that critical of an economic deal. But it's also that way in Rutland as well. They've had a major fire down there where they lost jobs. One of the malls had some stores leave. So they're just as economically depressed as the Northeast Kingdom, and it makes no sense to take jobs from an area that needs them so desperately.
Trish Bennett is an emergency communications dispatcher at the Derby Public Safety Answering Point, one of 2 emergency dispatch centers slated to close under proposed budget cuts. Trish, thank you very much for sharing your perspective.
Thank you very much, and we appreciate you having us on the program.
We're talking today about how 911 calls are responded to in Vermont and why there's a plan in the works to consolidate 2 of the state-run emergency dispatch centers. Listeners, we know a lot of you have questions and concerns about this. We've already been getting emails before the show. If you have a question, maybe you want to ask Public Safety Commissioner Keith Flynn about this move. Maybe you support it. Maybe you have concerns. Our number, you can share any of them, is 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211. You can also continue the conversation online by going to vpr.net and clicking on the Vermont Edition page. So now let's hear from the man charged with finding the department savings and making the plan to consolidate those centers. Keith Flynn is the commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. Commissioner Flynn, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So how do you respond to Trish Bennett? I mean, there's a lot that we talked about right there, but Trish Bennett says it's important to have local dispatchers who can talk about and know the local area when they receive a 911 call.
Well, I'll address that in a minute. The first thing I'd like to say is that, you know, I'm from Orleans County. I'm very aware of the economic climate there and the pressures that this is going to put on people. And this decision wasn't one that was entered into lightly. What we did was we took available data that we had and looked at that data and said, with our existing infrastructure, where can we recognize cost savings through efficiencies and do so without affecting the services we provide, but instead modifying our service delivery method. And that's what we did. And it's through those changes in technology that we've experienced over the years that we've come to a point, what I refer to as a decision point, where we are able to set back and look at this from a management perspective and say, are there efficiencies that we can recognize? And if so, can we recognize those efficiencies without affecting the safety of the people that we serve, without affecting the services that we provide to law enforcement, to our firefighters, to our emergency responders?
But why can't you recognize those efficiencies in Derby rather than Williston? That part I didn't follow you on.
Sure. I'll address both of those. First of all, we looked at the infrastructure of the existing system that we have now. The Derby PSAP is smaller. It does not have the hardened connections that would justify moving forward with bringing new technology in.
By hardened connections, you mean phone line type connections.
Right. The phone lines, the fiber optic lines, the technology points, for instance, like what we have in Williston. Also in Williston, that is where we currently have our system, which, for lack of a better description, we essentially, all our dispatch and all our radio communication runs through a central computer. That computer is housed in Williston. And in Williston, we have a built-in redundancy where we have fiber optic and microwave capability to allow us that capability so that, I know I heard Trish talking about the importance of redundancy, and redundancy is very important throughout our whole system. So we looked at the physical structure, we looked at the technology piece, and we looked at where we could do that and best serve the people of the Northeast Kingdom and down through. And we came to the conclusion that that would be through the Williston structure that currently exists. In regard to Rutland, we are actually shovel ready at this point to begin building the new barracks in Westminster. And the Rutland barracks in the Rutland PSAP, we looked at moving that to Rockingham so that the same staff will be in place in Rockingham than that it's just a short drive up the street from Rockingham to the new barracks, so that we can go ahead and make all these changes consistent with that. We also looked at the location of the Rutland barracks. As everyone will recall, back in Irene, the station commander down there, or the lieutenant, was the last person out of the building, and he came out of the parking lot in a tractor. That was the only way he could get out. So
because of the flooding.
Because of the flooding. So we take a look at all those factors and we put them in. We look at the technology piece. We're aware that the Westminster barracks and the Westminster construction is going to be state of the art. It's going to have additional room. We're looking beyond 2 years, 5 years. We're looking at the future of dispatch and what it's going to allow us to do. So as we make further steps in the evolutionary process of making the people that we serve safe and establishing better communications. And this is part of a process. This is not an event. This is something that we've been building toward for a number of years by increasing our mountaintop capabilities, by having enhanced capabilities as far as our microwave system, by the addition of fiber optics, by new consoles in our dispatch areas, by new radios in our cruisers, by new repeaters to allow greater officer communication. We've been moving toward this for a number of years, so this is a decision point that's based on the technology and not necessarily all driven by the budget.
Well, let me just put a fine point on that, and then I want to make sure that we can get our third guest in here, Bob
Sure.
Schlachter, who's president of the Rutland County Fire Mutual Aid. But before we go to him, Commissioner Flynn, given what you've just said, would you close these PSAPs if you didn't have these budget considerations? In other words, are you trying to make a painful cut in the least painful way, or are you saying this is an efficiency that should happen even if the knife wasn't at your department's throat?
I believe this is an efficiency that we should recognize and we should capitalize on. As a steward of state government monies and taxpayer monies, it's incumbent upon me to look at the best way to serve the public, but to do so in a way that utilizes and leverages state dollars to make sure that we gain the most from those dollars.
So you'd make these cuts even if you didn't have to save $2 million?
Yes.
We're talking today about the work of the state's public safety answering points. These are the dispatch centers that take 911 calls and usually send out the appropriate emergency personnel to respond to the call. Sometimes those functions are split up, but often they're put together. We've heard now from a dispatcher who's concerned that the center where she works may be closing under these proposed budget cuts. And we're talking with Public Safety Commissioner Keith Flynn. He's been explaining why he thinks the cuts are necessary and, in fact, are ways to improve our efficiency in the modern era. Coming up, we're going to hear from a fire chief who says the organization he represents is also concerned about the possibility of closing emergency dispatch centers. And listeners, if you'd like to weigh in, you can call 1-800-639-2211. That's 1-800-639-2211, or post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition page at vpr.net. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're taking a look at a proposal to consolidate state-run emergency dispatch centers. There are 8 dispatch centers in the state. 4 of them are quasi-private. And now the state is considering closing 2 of its 4 centers and folding them in to the other 2. PSAPs in Rutland and Derby would close. Williston and Rockingham would stay open and expand a little bit. The number of full-time staff at the state-run centers would go from 71 to 57. And the Public Safety Department thinks it could save nearly $2 million a year. The commissioner of that department, Keith Flynn, is with us today. And if you have a question or a concern you'd like to share, you can call 1-800-639-2211. Again, our number is 1-800-639-2211. Or you can post your thoughts on the Vermont Edition Facebook page. And we're also joined now by Bob Schlachter, president of the Rutland County Fire Mutual Aid. He's the Rutland City Fire Chief, so he comes to this issue from the perspective of a first responder. Bob Schlachter, thank you very much for being with us today. I appreciate it.
Yes, and thank you for the opportunity.
How do you interact with these PSAPs, the public safety answering points? Can you explain how that call routing works for you?
Sure. Let me just start off here for a second, if I could, with a little bit of history. Here in Rutland County, and I'm not speaking necessarily as the chief of the Rutland Fire Department. I'm in my other role as president of Rutland County Fire Mutual Aid that's made up of 27 fire departments in the Rutland area, 20 of which are dispatched by state dispatch at the Rutland PSAP/barracks. In 2004, we lost our primary dispatch down here, and we were looking for an alternative. We stopped at the Rutland dispatch office at the time, which was a very small operation at one end of the barracks with a single dispatcher on duty. There happened to be a captain there from the Brattleboro area, and when he heard what we were talking about, he indicated that Department of Public Safety was looking to do more dispatch work for emergency response agencies. And with a few phone calls and back and forth, we started off with 9 fire departments becoming part of the initial state dispatch. And as the commissioner says, technology has changed. We do not dispute that at all. Originally, we had 9 different radio frequencies coming in there, 9 different telephone lines coming in there. And over the years, yes, we have been able to bring things together to make it more efficient. We do common frequency paging now, so all those 20 fire departments are paged off of one frequency. And I want to say thank you, first of all, to the Department of Public Safety for providing this service to us. And unfortunately, we have a little difference of opinion at this point on the consolidation proposal. But the folks here in Rutland basically, in most cases, receive the phone call on the 911 system because we use a model down here of call taker slash dispatcher, and they take that information, gather it, and then page out the appropriate emergency response agency. The emergency response agency then, once they get the call, they go to their quarters, get their apparatus, because all the departments we're talking about are volunteer first response agencies as far as the fire side of things are concerned. So they dispatch the call, they page the call out. As soon as units sign on, they sign on with state dispatch. The dispatcher knows that units are going. Because of short personnel at this time in many volunteer departments, we're now using a model where we have multiple agencies paged out to respond to a reported structure fire and also what we call automatic mutual aid. The dispatch people here in Rutland have been a very good partner on making this all work well. And we want to make sure that whatever happens, we keep that level of interest and that level of community involvement.
So let me ask Commissioner Flynn, let me bring him in here. And Commissioner Flynn, how do you make sure that that happens and reassure people like Bob Schlachter, who have a good relationship with the dispatch center in Rutland, where they currently have this relationship and work with them to make sure that emergencies are responded to quickly and efficiently?
Right. And as the chief said, we do have a very good relationship with all our partners in emergency services and you know, and our firefighters and our police. One of the things that I think shouldn't be lost in all this is that the services that are provided now are going to be the same after the switchover date. The services are not going to change. The only thing that's going to change is a service delivery system. And the calls to the tone out the fire departments, that is all going to remain the same. So to the extent that there's going to be a change in service, that just isn't part of the plan. And as a matter of fact, we're going to use this service that we provide now as the base to move forward. And as I was talking about earlier, continue to evolve the system so that we can have a platform to move forward from that actually gives better services, and we look to enhance those services as time goes on. Through the use of technology, we are going to be able to do that, as we have since 15 years ago when we first went from 12 down to 4.
We got a note from Roman Wodnowiak, the chief of the Brandon Fire Department, who says, you know, what are the backup plans if one of the PSAPs is incapacitated, as the Rutland was during Irene? Testing of the consolidated PSAP in the Derby area is currently happening. How will the emergency service agencies staffed by the Rutland PSAP be involved in the testing when it occurs in this area? Commissioner Flynn?
Right. I recently spoke with the chief in regard to that, and we will conduct similar tests in Rutland before we do that, not only just within the barracks or within the PSAP, but it'll also be inclusive of our partners in the communities to make sure that the system that we have and the system that we're switching over to is going to work. Again, it is the same service, just a different delivery of that service.
And when is the switchover happening? This is all supposed to occur by July, is that right?
Yes, that's the plan. We want to have this in place so that we can start recognizing these savings and the efficiencies for the new fiscal year.
Let's go to Tim, who's calling in from Chester. Hi, Tim. You're on the air.
How you doing, Commissioner?
Good.
I wanted to actually point out the fact I was a Central Medical Emergency Direction Center operator, CMED for short, out of Massachusetts. I grant that Rutland County has 60,000 people, but the area I was working at was a whole entire town. The one town had 100,000 people. When they merged the Northeast Center with the Merrimack Valley Center, they said the same exact thing you did. What ended up was our workload went up, our call systems went up. They had to release one of the operators because they couldn't have two in the same functioning area. And therefore, the people that were actually doing the dispatching or the routing of the calls did not have knowledge of the local area where the other center did.
Tim, I take your point, and actually want to build on that, because we got a note from Sonny who says, as a former trooper, the intimate knowledge of the patrol area, the back roads, and certain community partners is a life-saving asset to both the public and all of the officers, EMTs, and other emergency responders, not to mention the public lives that are sometimes at stake. And Commissioner Flynn, as you can imagine, we're hearing this from a lot of people, that if you remove two centers, that you're removing a lot of geographical knowledge and a lot of cultural understanding of these areas, and that that could have an impact when it comes to, you know, the minutes and the time needed to save somebody's life.
Right. And I think 15 years ago, when they made this switch over from 12 down to 4, that argument probably carried a lot more weight than what it carries now. For instance, the dispatchers in Derby, they cover the area from the Canadian border all the way down to Thetford. So when you look at the local knowledge piece there, you know, it might very rightly be suggested that a lot of the local knowledge that's been gained by the dispatchers in those seats has been learned while they were sitting in those seats. Also, the local knowledge piece is more than just the dispatch piece. It's part of the team piece, because the people that we're dispatching, we rely heavily on their local knowledge too. The local knowledge of the local volunteer fire departments, which are the backbone of firefighting in the state. The local EMS squads, the local police agencies. I don't think that we can discount their local knowledge at all either, as playing into this calculus.
Sure, although sometimes you get a call in to one of the dispatch centers from somebody who doesn't know where they are, and it's very difficult then, if you're doing a game of telephone, sort of, to tell the emergency responders, who may know the area very well, but if this dispatcher doesn't, the dispatcher can't tell the emergency responder in as exact a way where they think they ought to go. You know, that green house means something if you're from the area. It doesn't if you don't live in the area. But let me ask Bob Schlack that, because Bob Schlachter, does it matter if the dispatchers are fairly local? I mean, surely they don't all have knowledge of the places that they're getting calls from, even if they are in the Rutland Dispatch Center. And if they're dispatching for a wide area, they're not going to know the whole area. So why does it matter, do you think?
Well, again, here in this area, we have had a number of cases where that local knowledge has been very helpful. One of the things that we see here in Rutland, and the commissioner may have a response to this also, is the fact that we have a lot of skiers that go out of bounds at Killington and Pico. They go over the backside of Killington Mountain and wind up having to basically be talked out of the woods to a location down on what we call the Wheelerville Road. And usually that means that we don't have to send first responders or law enforcement folks up there to bring them out. And in most cases, it's done by the dispatchers, who have local knowledge of those trails in that area and can guide them, knowing the landmarks down and through.
Could you do that this way again, though, if you just had a dispatcher who called out to the local, you know, fire department or local emergency responders, and then those people talked them down the mountain rather than going out there, but it might be a different person but doing the same job?
To a point, I would say that is possible, but we got to keep in mind one thing here, and the commissioner said it. The fire and EMS organizations, especially in the Rutland County area, with the exception of the city of Rutland, are all volunteer agencies. And given the fact that they're volunteer agencies, personnel, especially during the daytime, can be very limited. And sometimes having a dispatcher who can just make that connection with the cell phones, try to triangulate signals using the cell phones, can bring them out of the woods without having to put any responders up in that space. And again, it ties it all together and it makes it much faster. I realize that that's maybe a luxury considered with what we have here, but it is something that has worked well for us. As far as the responding to calls and knowing the area, again, the situation has come a number of times where even the local fire department might not know exactly what the caller is bringing to the attention of the 911 call taker and the dispatcher. And the dispatcher is that vital person in between who determines the best way to get those responders there. They have mapping software and other things, and that's all part of this technology, which I happen to think is getting much better to do this. But basically, again, I do believe, and most of the people here in Rutland County believe, that local knowledge is important.
We're talking today about the plan currently proposed and in front of the legislature to close two of the emergency dispatch centers that are run by the state and consolidate them. The state currently runs 4. In the new plan, there would be 2, and they would be in Williston and Rockingham. Derby and Rutland would be closed. We're talking with Bob Schlachter, who's president of the Rutland County Fire Mutual Aid, and Keith Flynn, who's commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. And we're hearing from many of you as well. Our number, if you'd like to weigh in, is 1-800-639-2211. Or you can carry on the conversation. It's a robust one. Go to vpr.net and click on Vermont Edition. We got a note from Elizabeth who says, where would the cost savings be? The two remaining centers would start understaffed right from the beginning, which of course would increase overtime. On paper, it looks like they would be fully staffed. However, that's only if the Vermont State Police trained dispatchers remain on the job. It takes several months for the testing and hiring phase and an additional 5 or 6 months on the job training process before that person is a standalone dispatcher. It also takes a dispatcher a good 2 years before they even feel comfortable in the position. I would like to challenge Commissioner Flynn to visit and actively participate in dispatch at one of the Vermont State Police dispatch centers before continuing with this process. Commissioner Flynn, to Elizabeth's point, how will you make sure that these two dispatch centers are fully up and running with fully trained staff? I mean, you do already have overtime hours that are calculated into your budget, and you'll continue to have some, at least, sure, with the new plan.
Well, one of the things that you look at when you run a system-wide program is you have to look at the hour allocation. For instance, as we schedule now for our four PSAPs in Vermont, we start every week with an average of 50 hours of unfilled time that we have to find ways to fill. By utilizing the economy of scale, by consolidating down and actually putting more people in the PSAPs, once we consolidate, we're going to be able to reduce that average of 50 hours down to 16 unfilled. That's per week. And we'll be able to do that because we're going to have more people in the PSAP at any given time. That will in turn allow us to spread the workload more evenly among those people that are in the PSAPs, in the chairs, and that is one of the areas where we plan on recognizing the cost savings.
Let's go to Don, who's calling in from Rutland. Hi, Don. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Hi.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for allowing my question in here, and thank you for being there, Commissioner Flynn and Bob Schlachter, to explain this. My questions are both about budget. You, in explanation to the VPR people's question about whether it was critical or whether it was just budget related, you said that you would do this anyway. Does that mean that there were misstatements made? Because the governor has said right along that if we could come up with, or the legislature could come up with the 1.7, that he would keep the centers. That's my first question. And the second one is, since the budget hasn't even been approved, where is the money coming from for the closing of Derby already and the steps that you have already put in place to do these closings?
Don, thanks for the call. And Don, I think partly is referring to there's some testing that's already been done with the Derby PSAP to bypass it, to go to Williston to do some testing on this. In response to Don's questions, how do you answer, Commissioner Flynn?
Some of the retrofitting costs and some of the costs of moving it we're actually taking care of internally. We're able to use some of these same consoles that we have in existence now to be able to move to Williston to enable this. As far as some of the other costs, for instance, through the Carousel Corporation, as far as our telephones and other areas, we've been able to use funds from our FY15 allocation. And that's one of the reasons why we're looking to making sure that we get this done before the new fiscal year starts so that we have taken care of those expenses out of our FY15 budget so that when we move into 16, we'll be able to recognize those savings.
So that was Don's question about the finances for how are you doing this now. Don had a couple of money questions.
Okay. I'm not sure what the other one was.
Yeah, I think neither am I. I'm trying to remember what he said first. Yeah. Now, actually, so yeah, Don wanted to know how you're doing this already, but you know, this is something maybe you could talk a little bit more about where the savings will come from, because you're thinking about $1 million will be saved in personnel costs and then in other operational costs and stuff like that. That's where the other $250,000, $750,000 comes from.
Right, because what there's going to be a net reduction in personnel of 14. Because we've recognized and looked at the data to tell us how many dispatchers we actually need to be able to do our dispatch piece. Now, one thing that's important is to recognize that there are two functions that go on within our PSAPs. And I think Trish spoke about this earlier. We have the 911 function. 911 is governed by the E911 board. And from that, the state receives $810,000 a year as its portion from the 911 board. However, that is not enough to totally fund the cost to the state of operating the call answering piece. And those funds come from the Universal Service Fund. The other function that occurs is within the dispatch area. So you have to look at those two functions separately, and you have to look at how together they function to affect the operations of the PSAP and affect costs. And that's part of the calculus that we have to use when we move further in this evaluation of does this move make good sense for Vermonters? Does it make good sense for the services we provide? And can we continue to provide these services at this level? The services that we're providing today will be the same services that are received after the consolidation.
That's Keith Flynn. He's the commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. Keith, thank you very much for being on the program. Appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
We've also been talking with Bob Schlachter, who's president of the Rutland County Fire Mutual Aid. Bob, thank you for your time.
Yes, and thank you for the opportunity.
And we'll continue to look at this here on VPR as we look at whether these emergency call centers should be closed and folded into one another. Coming up, Vermont gets more than a third of its electricity from Quebec, specifically from the provincial utility Hydro-Québec. After the break, we'll talk with the organizer of a conference going on today and tomorrow that looks at the relationship between these two governments and forecasts the energy landscape moving forward. You're listening to Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Vermont first bought power from Quebec a century ago. That trade relationship deepened in the 1980s when then-Governor Richard Snelling negotiated with Quebec Premier René Lévesque to secure the first of several long-term power deals. That relationship remains strong between the cross-border neighbors and is one of the reasons a conference is being held at UVM today and tomorrow. It's called Power from the North. Joining us now is one of the organizers of the conference. Richard Watts is director of the Center for Research on Vermont. Welcome back to Vermont Edition, Richard. Nice to have you.
Thanks, Jane. Hi.
So Vermont now gets more than a third of our electricity from Hydro-Québec. What made power from Quebec so appealing to Vermont?
Well, it's an old story, and it's a story that's very present today. The 1970s, the oil crisis, the embargo, drove up the prices of energy, electricity. And the governor who came into the office in the late 70s, Richard Snelling, looked to the north for reliable, long-term, inexpensive electricity. And at the same time, as you pointed out in the intro, the premier of Quebec was thinking about exporting some of these vast hydro resources that they had. And so Dick Snelling very famously told his staff to learn French and instituted a whole series of negotiations, which led to those first contracts that you talked about, not only for Vermont, but to wheel electricity from Hydro-Québec into New England.
And by and large, this seems like an arrangement that's been good for both Vermont ratepayers and for the Canadian utility owned by the provincial government, Hydro-Québec, right?
You know, there has been some ups and downs along the way. At one time, the long-term price of that contract with Hydro-Québec was more expensive because energy prices in New England had dropped, and that was a difficult time here in Vermont for Vermont ratepayers. Today, I think the story is that because of the long-term contract, we actually have in part because of the contract, I should say. We have lower electricity prices, and while other utilities in New England are in for rate hikes, Vermont, actually Green Mountain Power most recently, is in for rate decreases.
There also, over the years, have been issues with Indigenous peoples who've been displaced by the increased production and damming in northern Quebec. Where does that opposition stand now?
Well, that was, of course, part of this, the huge contention around the early development of these resources. And I should say, in addition to that, was the controversies around building high-voltage transmission lines through Vermont to wheel this power into Vermont and New England. We have a speaker at this conference who represents the Inuit and the Cree to some extent, and he talked at length this morning about those relationships. There have been negotiations and some agreements. One's called the Grand Bargain that has achieved some degree of peace, but I think it remains an issue of some contention and some controversy in Quebec.
You're hosting this conference at UVM called, as I said, Power from the North. Governor Shumlin, Quebec Premier Philippe Couillard are participating. What's the actual aim of the conference? What are you hoping to find out?
Well, our intent with the Canadian Studies Program was to explore this long-term energy relationship, look at the social, the environmental, the economic consequences, and think about how the past foretells the future. And in some ways, the story of the past, a governor looking to the north, bringing hydro resources into Vermont and New England, building a new transmission line, is the story that's happening again. Our neighbors in southern New England are looking to reduce their reliance on natural gas. They're looking to decarbonize their electric systems. Hydro could play a large role in that. How does it get to southern New England? Where would the transmission lines go? What would Vermont get out of it? Those are all questions that we need to think about here in Vermont, and I think those are some of the questions that are coming out in this forum today.
Talk a little bit more about that, the future and what we're looking towards, because it's not just Vermont that's looking for power from Quebec and not just Vermont that Quebec is looking at.
No, not at all. In fact, you know, Vermont has long-term stable agreements. We're a very small percent, really 4 or 5% of the regional, the New England electric grid, and it's the states to the south of us that are heavily reliant on natural gas that are thinking about where their future electricity should come from, and also how they might diversify and reduce the carbon footprint of their present systems. And Hydro-Québec, a very large utility, has enormous hydro resources that might be available at the right price if they can reach an agreement on how to bring it into those markets. So that's what is sort of in the background of this conversation.
I imagine these states are also looking at how Vermont has structured this relationship and how Vermont assigns value to the renewable energy credits that they're considering Hydro-Québec to be a renewable energy source.
Right. Vermont does that, and some of these other states don't. So that has to be part of this conversation as well.
So, Richard Watts, what do you hope then, after the end of the day tomorrow, you'll emerge with that will help guide your research and your focus going forward?
Well, one of the exciting things about for us doing this is it's an academic setting, and we, I think, feel like we get to ask all the questions. We've structured this whole two-day session so that the panelists are very short. There's lots of room for audience engagement and interaction. You know, we hope, as I said at the beginning, we hope to tell the story, not only the story of the past, but what the story of the future might look like. And to do that, we're capturing as much as we can of what's happening over these 2 days, and we'll make it available and accessible and transparent to the greater public.
Anything fun that's already happened so far? We're talking to you on your lunch break on the first day.
I think there's a whole lot of hallway conversations. A whole lot of people are getting to meet each other, and I'm hearing a whole lot of French being spoken on the top floor of the Davis Center at UVM.
Do you speak French?
Not enough, but my partner is fluent, of course, and goes back and forth quite nicely on these topics.
Your partner in the conference who heads up Canadian Studies at UVM.
Exactly.
Richard Watts is the director of the Center for Research on Vermont at the University of Vermont. He's one of the organizers of a conference going on now that takes a look at the electricity agreements between Quebec and the New England states. Thank you so much for being on the program today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Jane.
As part of the conference, the Premier of Quebec, Philippe Couillard, is here in Vermont. We'll have more on his visit to the state throughout our newscasts. And stay tuned tomorrow on Vermont Edition when we'll have a conversation with the Premier himself. Also on tomorrow's broadcast, we'll look at the evolving legal landscape surrounding same-sex marriage. This spring, the U.S. Supreme Court will take up the issue, and tomorrow we'll look at some of the areas of contention. Should the rights to marry rest with the states or the federal government? Should it be legislators or judges who decide? We'll explore the legal claims of same-sex marriage tomorrow at noon, and you can weigh in by writing to vermontedition@vpr.net. Our program is produced by Patty Daniels and Rick Singeri, with production assistance from Devin Karambolis. Mary Williams directed the show. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. And our theme music was composed by Grace Potter and the Nocturnals. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.